Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is an Election Eve special coverage on NPR News. So far this morning, we've talked about what the election buzz among partisans on the ground sounds like, whether you, the voters, are brimming with optimism or anger, and what kinds of questions about the process of voting are coming up for you. Angela Davis will be here with some answers on that in a bit. Now we're talking with pollsters and political observers about what's top of mind as voters make their choices. We're starting with Brad Coker. He's managing director for the Mason-Dixon Polling Company. He's been polling this year for Minnesota Public Radio News and the Star Trib. And Brad, welcome to the show. It's good to talk to you again.
Good morning.
Talk to me about how you factor in turnout, which we're hearing will be highly unusual for a midterm, as you look at polling results.
Well, I agree that I think there's going to be a very high turnout. We're already seeing in states where there's early voting, they're breaking records, and things seem to be on par with even presidential year turnout. As far as it affects the polling, I don't think, at least the way we do it, has that much of an effect. We use voter registration lists, so we know we're talking to people who are actually registered to vote. And then, you know, from there we screen them to determine how likely they are to vote. So I don't think a turnout factor would, you know, have much of an impact on the way we do it, just because we're using voter lists.
Okay, well, I ask you that because you've heard some of the analysis after 2016. People voted who hadn't voted for a long time. They wouldn't be on anybody's list. Oh, and people didn't tell pollsters what they were really thinking about. I'm interested in how you factor those kinds of things in to get some kind of accurate prediction.
Well, I don't believe that it's not a perfect science, but you know, we've been doing it for 35 years, and you do get the occasional election where people fly under the radar a little bit, you know, and we saw that with Trump. He was bringing in voters that hadn't voted in a long time.
Exactly.
Those voters are you know, now they're part of the pool because they voted in the last election. I don't know that there's any other voters, except for perhaps some on the, actually on the other side, where you may have some newer, younger voters that they weren't able to turn out for Hillary Clinton 2 years ago. So, you know, if I'm looking for voters that were off the radar screen, I'd be more inclined to say they might be, you know, newer, younger voters, not older voters who had become you know, more sporadic in their participation.
All right. I want to grab a call for you and ask you how you deal with a voter like this. Listen in to Carl in Pine City. Hi, Carl. How are you approaching the midterms?
Hi. Well, I've already voted, and I'm 46 years old. I voted. I'm independent. I voted mostly Democrat my whole life, you know, some independent voting. And this year, I was very bizarre and sort of surreal to walk in there and vote straight Republican, which is what I did. And it's not because I'm converting to sort of the Republican agenda. I mean, I consider myself kind of a centrist liberal, I guess you would say. But I absolutely hate what's happened to the Democratic Party in the last few years with identity politics and this intersectional sort of models of people. I suppose I hate that because I'm, you know, 46. I'm a straight white male and I'm rural. So kind of on that whole scheme, I'm nearly a terrorist or a rapist. And so I'm not voting for Republican as much as I want to punish the Democrats, and I want them to recover a real liberalism and a real sort of going forward, not what we have right now.
Carl, this is interesting. I was asking voters if they are voting to send a message, and what you've described there is you clearly are. Brad, how would you measure, you know, a voting cohort like that? I usually vote Democratic. This year I'm voting Republican, and I'm doing it for a very specific reason.
Well, you know, when you do a survey and you do a random sample, you get a wide range of opinions. So those voters are there. You know, not every person who identifies as a Democrat votes for the Democrat. Every voter who identifies as a Republican will end up voting for the Republican, even in our poll. And then the independent voters, like this gentleman, they scatter all over the place. Some of them lean Republican and vote Republican. Some of them lean in, you know, Democrat and stay Democrat. But others just, you know, they are still independent, and they'll go in and split their tickets. And, you know, we've seen some split ticket voting in our polling. I mean, if you look at the difference between the two Senate races, you know, Senator Klobuchar has a much larger lead than Senator Smith. The Democrats are slightly ahead in the governor's race, but the Republican is slightly ahead in the race for attorney general. So there are clearly voters out there that are splitting their tickets. And some are Democrats, some are Republicans, and many of them, however, are independents. And that's why they're independents.
Brad, I'm so glad you brought that up. I've heard from really an unusual number of ticket splitters today on the show. Is there something that happens where we might see more ticket splitters in the kind of highly polarized environment we're in, which you would naturally think, well, then you're going to get a lot of straight party voters. And we do still get that. I guess I'm asking you, are there some political forces at work here that would lead more to this ticket splitting?
Well, I think in Minnesota, one of the things that would be driving ticket splitting is that most of the offices that people are voting for are open seats. The one race where you have an incumbent running is Senator Klobuchar, and she's comfortably ahead. Voters know who she is, knows what she's about. She's always been very popular, and so she is a known quantity, and, you know, she is the one candidate who seems to, you know, be the, you know, you can probably go out on a limb and say, well, we'll win tomorrow. The others, those are all open seats. And so you've got a, you know, Governor Dayton stepping aside. You've had 8 years of his administration. And, you know, some people like what he did. Some people don't like what he did. Now they have to find their next governor. Both candidates, there are still voters out there as of 2 weeks ago who had never heard of them before.
Wow.
So they're still trying to figure out who's running. And, you know, Senator Smith was appointed, has never been on the ballot before, at least as a Senate candidate. And, you know, I think that's what's really getting people to split their tickets is they're having to choose between so many new faces. And I don't think they feel comfortable just going and, you know, I'm not saying everybody, there are party voters, don't get me wrong, but I think there are independent voters out there who probably don't feel comfortable just voting for all the Democrats or all the Republicans if they're talking about new candidates that they've never voted for before.
Okay. Call for you here, Brad, from Al in Eden Prairie. Hey, Al. Hi. Thanks for waiting.
Hey, good morning. I guess I'd be considered a dinosaur because I'm one of those few people that still has a landline. So with that privilege, I've been beset upon with calls about surveys and things like that over the last couple months. And after probably, you know, I was, you know, pretty straight up with everything about the first five, six, seven times for the most part. I'm independent, so I probably will split my ticket. But by the seventh or eighth time, I said, you know, I'm just like, I'm kind of tired of this, so I'm going to have some fun. And pretty much now have been, for the last month and a half, basically been telling them the opposite of what I'm actually going to be doing. And
why?
I don't know how many are out there, but
Al, there's a purpose in polling. Why are you telling pollsters the opposite of what you're really going to do?
Because I'm sick of it. I'm sick of politics, being an independent, and not having anyone that truly appears to be independent out there to vote for. It's so partisan. It's just, it's either that or I'm just not going to vote. So I have voted for years and years and years. I'm not going to do that. So
okay.
Makes it a sport.
Well, I know this isn't the first time Brad's heard this. Brad, what do you say about this?
I'm glad this came up because this is an interesting situation. I've been asked this question before, and typically what I say is for every Republican who lies and says they're voting Democrat, there's a Democrat lying and saying they vote Republican. So
yeah.
The law of the averages usually works out because voters do this, but it's not all one group. Everybody's trying to trick the other. But I do have a question because one of the things that's really changed polling, and I've been doing this 35 years, I've been doing it in Minnesota going back to, I think, maybe the late 80s, maybe the Dukakis Bush race in 88. I think we were working with you in the other newspaper at the time. And so there wasn't a lot of polling going on at the time, and response rates were very good. What we've seen is sort of this explosion of these so-called robo-polls, where you get a phone call and it's a recorded message and it says it's a poll. And then you start pushing buttons and you find out it's really not a poll. They're asking skewed questions. It's actually a campaign message that's coming at you, and it becomes pretty obvious that they're trying to persuade you.
Wow.
I would like to ask the caller, is that what you're referring to in terms of getting bombarded with calls? Are these kind of these robo-poll things?
Al?
Yes, that is part of it, and also part of it is the fact that I'm very suspicious of, and if someone called and said, I'm with the AP or I'm with NPR or something like that, people that I know, but I've got just a gut suspicion that half of these things, even if they're live people, are actually one party or the other. We're doing a poll. Yeah, we want to put you in the checkbox of whatever you are. It's like, no. So that's another part of it. I don't trust them.
Al, I think you're right. I mean, Brad, aren't you saying that it is indeed the campaigns who are using that?
Yeah. It's campaigns and third parties. You know, it's, PACs and independent committees. And they'll use a guise of a poll to try to actually persuade you. Now, the campaigns will do polls that I call political market research. They generally do it a little earlier in the cycle. And if you're polling for, say, a Republican candidate, you know, the first 10 questions of the poll will be pretty straightforward. Then they start testing their arguments. You know, if you knew the Democratic candidate voted this way on this bill, would that make you more likely to vote for them? If you knew they voted this way, if you knew they voted that way. And they're trying to see what hot button pushes you to cross over and then vote for their candidate.
Yeah.
And that's usually done early in the process. That's why that's why certain television commercials get made, certain flyers get made. When a candidate stands up at a debate and ducks a question and answers it with something completely different, they're doing that because their internal polling says, if you talk about this bill, people don't like your opponent's vote on that bill, so talk about that and don't answer the question. So, one of the things that we've done differently is, as recently as, maybe 8 years ago, we used to poll right up to, the Thursday or so before the election and pop the numbers out at the last minute. We've really rolled back, and this is just not in Minnesota but in other places. We kind of stop about 2 weeks out and say, okay, here's what we've got.
Really?
There's 2 weeks to go. And one of the reasons we've cut back is that in the last 2 weeks, getting through to voters is very hard because these robocalls are just bombarding people. And I'm from Florida. I live in Florida, which if you follow national politics, there's an incredible amount of emphasis on what's going on down here. Yesterday alone, I had 15 robocalls.
Oh, my God. Because you still have a landline, Brad?
Landline and cell phone.
They got you on the cell too. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but what was crazy about it is everybody in my household has already voted. I mean, we voted a month ago, it seems like. But they're still calling us. And if you don't pick up, they leave you a message. And, as a professional pollster, we started to have to fight this a few years back. And we found out it's just crazy if we try to do stuff in the last week because people don't want to answer their phones.
Right.
So, you know, I totally feel for the caller because I have to deal with it from a professional side. And, you know, that's my business, and it's been my business for 35 years. So I don't like them any more than you do.
Brad, I have to ask you a question, given the fact that you're in Florida. I notice that in digging into the polling that you did for Minnesota, especially in our governor's race, that some of the trends that you're, and this would, I think, you know, fit, that some of the trends that you're seeing in Minnesota, demographic, geographic, are holding for the rest of the country. So we see that, you know, Democrat Tim Walz, if he's going to win this governor's race, he needs to turn out women, young voters, urban voters, if he's going to prevail. Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin in that Senate race, she needs that too. Stacey Abrams in Georgia. As would you say you will find similar voter trends necessary for these candidates in just about everywhere you'll look in the country?
Yeah, the only place you're not seeing that dynamic are in races that are largely uncontested. You know, where you have a sitting senator or sitting governor who's not receiving a serious challenge. But in every other contested race, whether it be a governor's race, a Senate race, a congressional race, even local races, there are a lot of legislative races up in states this year. You know, that's the formula. Democrats are trying to sort of counter the, you know, the Trump movement, which was bringing in, you know, newer voters who had sort of fallen off the radar screen. They're trying to rebuild the Obama coalition, which was, again, women, younger voters, non-white voters. And, you know, Hillary Clinton tried to do it, but Hillary Clinton was not Barack Obama. So she could not recreate that coalition, at least in the same numbers. And so the challenge is going to be, can you rebuild the Obama coalition without Obama? The answer to that under most situations would probably be no in a midterm, except you have Donald Trump. And if there's anything that might motivate the, you know, more marginal voter to come back out in a midterm election, it would not be so much to vote for the Democrat or, you know, for that candidate. It might be to send a message to vote against Trump. So that's the Republicans' biggest fear, is that there are going to be people that come out to vote for Tim Walz or for Tina Smith that aren't really there to vote for Tina Smith or for Tim Walz. They're there to just send a message that they don't want, you know, they want to sort of kick Trump in the teeth.
Oh, I mean, no, we're definitely hearing that. In fact, you know, my question to listeners this morning was, how are you voting? Why sending a message? And yeah, a lot of people called in to say they're sending a message. I want to grab one last call for you here, Brad, from Margaret in St. Michael. Hey, Margaret, thanks for waiting. Curious about how you're approaching this. Tell me.
Yep. Well, so I actually have been participating in the election this year by outdoor knocking. I'm in a super red district, the 6th district.
Right.
This year, we've seen huge numbers of people saying that they're voting blue. They're tired of voting for Republicans. They don't take care of people. We've raised more money than we ever have in this district. I'm seeing it totally opposite than some of the callers that I'm hearing from you, that they've really just had it, and they want to see some stability, and they want to see the Democrats win. We've even seen way more sign locations.
Yeah, so Margaret, the question, and then I'm going to take this to Brad, is are you saying that you're seeing flipping, that there are people who consider themselves Republicans and they're going DFL this time?
Yep, I actually have talked to a number of people that had Republican signs out last time, said they're never voting Republican again. They're flipping to the Democratic side. And it's been quite a message that we've heard that we've never heard in past years.
I appreciate the call. So, Brad, what does your polling, and not just in Minnesota, but in some of the other areas that you're polling, tell you about that?
Well, the crossover vote is about equal. You have in some areas, now you have Democratic voters saying, I'm voting Republican, you know, and the Republicans that are switching to Democrats are citing Trump. The Democrats that are switching to Republicans are citing the Kavanaugh situation and all that went on there. so, you know, you have this discourse and incivility going on. And I think it was working to the Democrats' advantage when it was just Trump out there. And what we saw is after the Kavanaugh hearing, the Democrats kind of shot themselves in the foot by kind of taking the low road in many people's minds there. So, you know, we've heard from one voter who just told us that they're voting Republican, even though they've voted Democrat, because they're frustrated with the, you know, the political correctness and some of the stuff that the more progressive Democrats are pushing. And now we have someone else calling in saying they're knocking on Republican doors, and Republicans are telling them that, you know, they're disgusted with Donald Trump, they're going to vote Democrat. I think to some extent it's a wash, but, you know, if I had to say if that is the driving factor, and it's a midterm election, the net is probably going to favor the Democrats in a state like Minnesota, which is still relatively blue. Now you go into some states like Missouri, you know, some of the other states that are, you know, where Democratic senators are in trouble, you see the opposite effect. It's probably going to marginally help the Republican candidate. So, you know, if you're going to get, you know, if you're balancing the scales in Minnesota, I think the scale balances a little bit more to the Democratic candidates in terms of the, you know, people that are going out and voting emotionally.
Hey, Brad, I really appreciate the benefit of your experience in this and your knowledge on it. Thanks so much for the time on a busy day, I'm sure.
Oh, I had a great time.
Brad Coker is Managing Director at Mason-Dixon Polling and Strategy and talking to us today from Jacksonville, Florida. I'm also interested in how Minnesota voters' perceptions are intersecting with voters in other parts of the upper Midwest and other parts of the country. So we're turning to two guests in Iowa and Wisconsin. Barry Burden is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And with us from Madison, and Barry, welcome. It's good to have you on the line.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Ann Seltzer is with us. She's president of Seltzer & Company, a polling company based in Iowa, and she's with us from West Des Moines, Iowa. And Ann, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
I have to ask you both about something that has popped up in our hours of coverage here, and that is voters who are ticket splitting. And one of the things that that Brad told us about that was that when you've got open seats that are going to be filled, you have more people who maybe aren't familiar with the candidates, and you may get more voters who split the ticket. And I wonder if there's a way to measure that or what you're seeing in Iowa.
Well, in fact, you don't even have to have an open seat to see some ticket splitting going on. Excuse me. We just completed, and it was published yesterday, our final Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll, looking at the state of the races here in Iowa. That's, we have a governor's race, which Kim Reynolds is currently serving as governor. This will be her first election in running for that seat in her own right.
She was appointed, right?
Exactly. And she currently trails by a 2-point margin. But we also did a generic test in the congressional districts, so we can look district by district and see that Kim Reynolds' opponent, Fred Hubble, is leading in 3 of the 4 congressional districts, and Democrats are leading in 3 of the 4 congressional districts.
Huh.
But it is an indicator of the margin that there is some ticket splitting. So, for example, that 4th congressional district, and that runs along the Minnesota border, Kim Reynolds is leading. That's the district where she's leading by 9 percentage points. Steve King, maybe your listeners have has a little bit of a name.
We're familiar with what's happening with Steve King.
Is leading by only 4 percentage points. So that's telling us that there are some who are opting for the Republican Kim Reynolds, but now opting for a Democrat in that congressional district.
Barry, I have to believe that that's happening in Wisconsin because you've got a big governor's race and some other races, and some of these candidates are pretty polarizing. What do you observe about this?
Yes, there's also significant splitting happening in Wisconsin, and that's a new phenomenon. For the last decade or so, all of our statewide elections have pretty much had down-the-line party voting, at least for the races that are at the top of the ticket. But 2018 looks different. There are two races that are dominating the news right now. One is the governor's race between Scott Walker, who's the incumbent, and Tony Evers, who's his Democratic challenger. That race looks about dead even. In some polls, Evers has a slight advantage, but in others, they're essentially tied. But contrast that with the Senate race, which is between Tammy Baldwin, who's the Democratic incumbent, and her opponent, Leah Vukmir, who's the Republican challenger. There, essentially every poll has Baldwin up by about 10 percentage points, so a very commanding lead.
Yeah.
So you have two incumbents who are quite well-known, both running for re-election, but the vote patterns in the two races do not mimic one another. There are lots of voters who apparently are willing to choose Scott Walker for governor and then to cross over and vote for Tammy Baldwin for U.S. Senate.
The other thing I'm curious about with both of you is, as you look at voter turnout trends and what which candidates need which voters, you find here in Minnesota, I would guess it's the same way in your states, that younger voters, voters of color, suburban women need to turn out for Democratic candidates. You'll see a rural-urban divide. What is emerging for you, Anne, in the polling that you're doing about those voters?
Right. Well, as we know, those young voters are always of interest, and they do tend to tip toward the Democratic candidate. In fact, 52% of the under 35 group, according to our poll, are supporting Fred Hubbell. So that's above his overall number of 46%. That's a good group for him. And that's a less reliable group. What we do know from our poll, which is interesting, is we have aggressive early voting here in Iowa. And of the people age 65 and over that we polled, over half of them say they've already cast their ballot.
Wow.
So that's very definitely something that we take a look at in terms of, you want to talk about a reliable voter, they're so reliable they've already voted.
If you're tuned in this hour, we are continuing our special Election Eve coverage on NPR News, and we're talking with Anne Seltzer. She's president of Seltzer & Company, with us from West Des Moines, Iowa, and Barry Burden with us, professor of political science and the director of the Elections Research Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Looking at the upper Midwest, are voters sharing perceptions about their individual candidates and politics as a whole across the upper Midwest? And now I'm going to ask you to weigh in again, whether you are voting with optimism, a sense of obligation. Are you voting to send a message? I'm curious about what Anne and Barry are seeing in that. Is your vote, if you've already voted, was it about sending a message? Was it about something optimistic? You're voting for some kind of change? And if you are waiting until tomorrow, as I do, because I like the drama of Election Day, I want to hear about how you're approaching it. Here's the phone number, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter, at CarrieNPR, and on the live blog, where Steph Curtis is checking out what people are saying. And what are we hearing, Steph?
People are, Jared says, I've been waiting to vote since 2016, and I've requested my early ballot as soon as I could. I don't think I'm alone in that I'm willing to crawl over broken glass to vote this year.
Barry, I would assume you're going to find a number of Wisconsin voters who feel like that. Do you see the send a message? Do you see the I'm optimistic for change, or I like the way this is going and I want to make sure it continues? So what's your takeaway on that?
Yeah, I don't know about broken glass, but there is a lot of enthusiasm. The Marquette poll here in the state is one of the landmark polls, and it indicates very high levels of enthusiasm compared to, say, the last midterm election in 2014. Slightly higher among Democrats, but really very high for both parties. And it seems to be strong feelings largely about the Trump administration. Republicans who are enthusiastic about what's happened there, who are proud that Trump won the state back in 2016, and Democrats who are upset and appalled and want to take some action, and the midterm election is a way for them to express their displeasure.
Paul says on Twitter, voting Gen Xer pessimistic. The GOP is so rich, they will do anything to stay in power, and they have been dominant for most of my life. To the phones to Sud in St. Cloud. Hey, Sud, thank you so much for waiting. Tell me how you're thinking about this. Hi.
Carrie, thank you very much. I like this program.
Thank you.
You know, the reason I called in today was Yeah, I just I became a citizen like a month ago. It was September 11 this year when I became a citizen. So
congratulations.
You know, and I can't wait, you know, to vote. So I casted my vote like 3 days ago. So I voted for, you know, my first time. I'm 27 years old. First time voter. This was my first time I voted in my entire life. So it was like, you know, something that makes me, you know, extremely happy. And I voted for who I think, you know, clearly I was sending a message saying that, you know, this is Minnesota. I wanted to see this is Minnesota, you know, we all wanted to see in the future. So that's what makes me to vote. And I was, you know, extremely happy to vote and take a lot of my friends with me that day.
Congratulations on the citizenship, Sue. Good to have you on the phone line. To Mark in Rochester. Hi, Mark. How are you thinking about this?
Hi. I'm thinking we're going to continue with the Trump train. We had a wonderful rally for Donald Trump in Rochester. He is the first Republican I voted for in my entire life. I worked on Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition campaign. I worked with going way back to Hubert Humphrey's campaign, also in 1972. And Donald Trump's the first Republican I ever voted for. I finally realized that the DFL in Minnesota is not my grandfather's DFL. There's no more farmers or laborers in it.
Good to have the call, Mark. Thank you. Anne, how many Iowa voters do you find putting President Trump at the center of their reason for voting, whether it's for or against him?
You know, it is certainly playing a bit of a part here, but it's not a magnetic kind of thing.
Interesting.
His,
why?
His approval rating has actually tipped up a little bit. He now has favorability rating. He's now at 45% favorable, and that's up from 39% in September. It just hasn't been as nationalized here. But if I may, I'd like to go back to what the previous caller said two callers ago about going to the polls and bringing people with them. Our firm also conducts and released inaugural Grinnell College national poll. So this is national numbers, but we were very interested in looking at voter activation. So the woman who talked about crawling across glass, we were just curious if we could find a measurement of how many people were feeling they needed to do something. Polls often talk about feelings, like are you enthusiastic? Is there an intensity measure? But we wanted to know what people were doing. And so we asked a battery of questions about behaviors. And one of the things that really stuck out was a 50% number among Democrats who said one of the things they expected to do in the near future was to help other people vote.
Wow.
So this is apart from voting themselves.
Yeah.
Help other people vote. Just released in the Des Moines Register this morning was a look at absentee ballots that had been returned. The number, by the way, the number for the Republicans in that same poll was 34.
Huh.
So quite a gap between Republicans and Democrats. The returned absentee ballots is actually up 2 points for Democrats from the last midterms. It's down 12%, I'm sorry, for the Republicans and for independents.
Interesting.
So we're sort of seeing it
play
out, that there is an activation among Democrats, and it might well be what shows up at the polls. We can give this credit if, in fact, Iowa turns more blue than red.
Really interesting. Stuff off the page.
Jean says, I am voting with high anxiety, thinking of my children and grandchildren. I'm also bringing my brother to vote. He usually doesn't vote. He'll even be voting differently than I'll be in some areas. That bothers me slightly because he's not as informed in some of the issues as he could be. But I'm glad he's going to vote. This is a big deal. However, I'm dreading tomorrow's outcomes. Dreading.
But just what Anne was saying about people being motivated to bring voters along. Hey, Barry, I want you to listen to the way that Morning Edition host Rachel Martin opened a segment today about midterm voting. Listen to this.
If the 2016 election taught us anything, it's that polls cannot predict anything with absolute certainty.
So I know I've been talking to pollsters, but you're a political scientist, and I wonder what you would say about how to see these polls.
Well, you know, the polls are an attempt to capture where public mood is at any point in time. So they're likely not to get the result exactly right, in part because the electorate continues to change its evaluations as we get closer to Election Day. Part of what the pollsters missed in 2016 is that there seems to have been some late-breaking movement in Trump's direction after the time when most of the pollsters had shut down on the Friday before the election. There continued to be movement in his direction over the course of the weekend and right up to Election Day. So there are those kinds of things that are difficult to capture when you're doing traditional polling. But I think pollsters, and Ann is one of them, also learn from each experience and try to recalibrate and make adjustments along the way. I know that pollsters are thinking much more this cycle about trying to make sure they capture enough people with lower levels of education, because that was an oversight in 2016 that caused some of the polls to skew a little bit in the Democratic direction. But they, you know, they are not a forecast or a prediction exactly. They're really just a portrait of what the electorate has to say on a particular day.
Ann, sorry to do this to you, but I have a minute. I'd like to hear what you have to say to that.
Well, part of the problem that some pollsters have is that they try to predict what the electorate looks like. So they always look back to previous electorates and then say that's what it will look like in the future. Well, the best predictor of past behavior is future behavior. Future behavior is past behavior until there's change. So I have a method that doesn't rely on past behavior to predict the electorate, and I think this is a good year to not have the past shaping the way the electorate it might turn out.
Anna, I thank you so much for the time on a busy day. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And Barry, thank you. Really good to have your insight on a busy day in Wisconsin, too. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
Hey, our special Election Eve coverage continues. If you did not hear the Senate debate last night, we're playing it in full at noon. Stay with us.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.